I'm Howard Hale. Welcome back to the Horseman's Corner. I'm the host of the program, along with me co-host for today, Marty Martin, and our guest, Arizona horseman Charlie Hill. Let's continue our conversation with Charlie. I'm going to present an interesting situation to you two guys. We'll try some goofy things over here at our horse barn. We had a three-year-old stud and a five-year-old stud time for any breeding was over here about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they were by themselves, and I'll tell you what, they were getting kind of ornery. So we thought, oh, what the heck, when we had plenty of space, we just kicked those two in together, two studs. They get along fine.
Yeah, you did a great thing for them, I think. What do you think, Marty?
You know, I'm going to yield to you. I'm not going to even try to answer a question when you're on the line.
I appreciate that, Roger. Marty, but, you know, I think you did a great thing for him. I think, and particularly when it worked out. I mean, I don't know. I've been around both breeders and horsemen that would and wouldn't turn studs together, and I happen to know of a couple of studs that got turned together back early in my career. They were both racehorses, and they really, one of them wound up killing the other, and they really believed that it was a set-up deal, that there were rivalries in this programs and whatnot, and somehow it all happened. I don't know all the particulars about it, but I do know one of the studs perished in the exchange. And so yeah, I think a person has to be guarded a little bit about it, but then I've got other clients that they wouldn't own a stud if they couldn't run them together, and I think the people that do run their studs together, they get along a lot. The horses wind up being happier and getting along well, and particularly if they have room to get away from one another. I do think it's a hard thing. I think for you to have done it there and to have made it work, I do applaud that. I think it's very good, but it can have consequences, and I have to be out here and be, you know, willing to talk about the consequences too and how severe the consequences, you know, could be. One thing that I do say about almost any horse situation, if you've got them crabbing back and forth with each other over a fence, is most of the time the fence makes them brave, and you take the fence away and it doesn't take them long to sort out their issues, and some of that bravery goes away. And a lot of times just that one that was the noisiest behind the fence, and he'll wind up submitting pretty fast if you get him back out in the open. And I found that to happen over and over again. I've done that at different clinics I've put on and different programs that I've been in with our horses. One thing that I have done in the past, are just to make it a little bit more safe. Let's get away from what I've done, what I've seen. I don't know, you see these, what they call patient poles today. And at some of the big training places I used to go to, and I'd see them have a very similar thing, like a patient pole, and had a little key on it at the top, and where they could tie two horses on these patient poles. And I really thought it was just kind of a place that the horse learned to get patient. And I thought it was a place maybe where the understudy had loped them and had them ready for the trainer to get on and work on the more intricate maneuvers and different things that, you know, however their program was running. Because they were always standing there, you know, swishing flies for one another and their heads over the other one's back and being very good. And finally, one day I was talking to one of the trainers, and they said, you know what those things are for, is said you get two horses that don't get along and you put them on that patient pole, or I call it a tie-in tree, and it's on a swivel. And that way, if one gets aggressive to the other, it spins that horse around. It, you know, it pulls him back around. If he turned around to kick the other horse, well, then that horse, in his efforts to get away, would turn that horse back around. Or if he was taking a charge at him, trying to bite him, and he went to get away, the deal's going to pull him away, and you let them do that. So that's a that's another way that some people could do that. It would be a little safer, you know, than just absolutely turning them together. I turn a lot of them together. I had five studs running together at a clinic one time years ago in a clinic I was putting on in Thedford, Nebraska. And I didn't think anything of it until people started talking about it. I said, you see what that crazy guy did? He put them five studs out there together. But I was out there on my saddle horse where I was kind of controlling the situation and keeping them separated and working on what I call their social skills. And I think when it's done like that, I think it's a wonderful thing to do. I think to keep them locked up and isolated from each other, I think is almost inhumane myself. But there are some consequences to it.
Well, we've got another stud that's over here that I wouldn't turn in with them yet. Now, when it gets a little, when the days get a little shorter and there's a little less testosterone that's running, when we get over into November, December, I'll kick him in with the other two.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's, you've watched it and observed well enough to pick your, use good judgment. When I was at the Ray Hunt Memorial, the guys that were there observing and talking about it and everything talked about judgment, and they said, all these decisions are about having good judgment. And the one guy says, well, how do you get good judgment? And they said, experience. How do you get that? Bad judgment. And so, a lot of times if you just use good judgment in finding those times and not just listen to this broadcast and decide, well, it's time to run home and turn my studs together or something like that, I think if you use good judgment like that, Howard, that things are generally going to work out favorable for us.
The interesting thing is it made both horses, it changed their attitude completely. They're just
great to get along with, and they were getting kind of crabby.
I think that's great, and that's just, like I say, I think that's the way that the horses should be treated or run together is, and like I say, you kind of have to use good judgment and when and how and how much supervision and, some things like that, but I think that it's a good thing. Absolutely, I do.
Do we tend to baby our horses a little too much?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, I don't.
I guess what I'm saying is, sometimes when I say baby them, sometimes we're afraid to let them be horses and to interact with other horses like they should.
Yeah, I think the interaction with horses, I think without a doubt I need to keep this on the horse subject. I think at this clinic I touched on that a little bit through a sermon series that I'd heard at my church about parenting. And they talked about the culture started, when suburbia came up, how everything was safety for our kids and self-esteem and success, and not that those are bad things, but they need to be the byproduct. And I think that happens in our horse business too, that some of those things that you want safety wise for your horse, and you baby him around, you try to keep him out of trouble that way, then if that's the goal instead of the byproduct, then I think it has a negative reaction. And I'm not going to go into all this other about what I learned through this parenting series that I was listening to, but it touches on that same issue. It touches on the fact that it's not a matter of just raising them till they're adult. The kid or the horse, either one. I mean, they've got to learn some values. They've got to learn some responsibilities. They've got to learn some and some of that self-esteem that you try to protect, it winds up lowering self-esteem on both the horse and everything. And I think that horse can be so proud of himself if he has those opportunities to intermingle in the social skills and the groups and whatever other. It's one of the things that I work with all the time is to get the horse to not be so codependent on me. I want them to check back with me and feel back to me, and that's the thing that we all work for, is to get them to feel back. And one of the things Ray worked so hard, he talked about field timing and balance, and I'd go to him and I'd say, Ray, I'm kind of at a plateau here. And I said, I know it's in my timing, feel, and balance. And he'd always correct me and say, no, Charlie, it's in your feel, timing, and balance. And I'd walk away like I had the answer, and I didn't have any more answer than I did when I went to him. And finally, after a period of time, I went to him and I said, Ray, I said, how come it's so important that I say feel, timing, and balance instead of timing, feel, and balance? And he said, well, Charlie, it has to start with feel, and the feel is a two-way feel. He said, it's a feel from you out to your horse and where he's at mentally and where he's at physically and where he's at emotionally. And then it's a feel of him back to you, where you're at in those things. And then it's a timing of when we can effectively change this so that the feel develops even deeper. And then it's a timing of how frequently do we go back to it. And then it's a balance of when it's right. And that was a complete different view of what feel, timing, and balance was. I thought feel, timing, and balance, particularly studying Ray, was about knowing where their feet were and feeling other feet and then having a timing of when the foot's moving and when I can help the foot, which that is all part of it. And then it was a balance of me staying on balance so I can manipulate it. But that his explanation there just shattered that for me. I mean, it was balance was when it was right, and the feel was a two-way feel. And you have to work to get that feeling back to you so that they can help fill in for you, and you have to feel out to them so you can fill in for them. And then there's a balance of no need to fill in for either one. You're both taking care of your own responsibilities. And I think that that's something that I work very hard to try to present over and over again as many times as we can, so people get a chance to see that it's not a push button type of a situation that you're trying to put your horse into so that he understands this command or that command, that it becomes a working relationship where you share responsibilities and you share the opportunity to help one another out and feel in for one another until there's no need for filling in or very little need for filling in on either side.
Let's take our last break of the day, but let Charlie Hill back with us in just a moment to talk more about that field. You're listening to the Horseman's Corner. It's the Rafter Inventory Blowout at Brighton Feed and Saddlery, 370 North Main in Brighton, Colorado, on leg boots, ropes, home decor, bits, saddle pads, fly spray, and books. Up to 50% off, but the quantities are limited. New inventory is arriving from the fall markets. Then there's also a great selection of rawhide and snaffle bit gear, including Bozell's, Rommel Reins, and Horsehair McCarty Reins. Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st, is their great Neutrino horse feed sale, up to $4 a bag off. And don't forget October 17th for Brighton Feed and Saddlery's Ladies Night Out. Discounts, games, and live auction for cancer awareness. That's BrightonSaddlery.com, or you can reach them from anywhere by calling 800-237-0721, 800-237-0721, or BrightonSaddlery.com. That's Brighton Feed and Saddlery, 370 North Main in Brighton, Colorado, a great place to shop for anything that involves the horse.